First off, I'd like to say that you're a beautiful bunch of people. You're very warm and loving, from what I've seen. And that's something that I've seen in most of the groups that I've attended, some out of state, some out of my state. And I think that's why this group, these groups, AA, Al-Anon, Alateen, any associated with us, are so special. I belong here. Believe me, I belong here. And I pray a lot when I know I've got a speaking engagement. Believe me. I tend to get awfully nervous, and I was just a few minutes ago. But my higher power is calming me down, and I thank God for that. So this is the way I work my program. This is my story, not Princeton's, not yours, not AA or Al-Anon. So I hope you'll bear with me. I was born in Chicago, Illinois. And I was born in 1933. I'm giving away my birth date. Heaven forbid. Anyway, when I was 6 weeks old, I was given over to my grandparents. And I was taken from them again to live with my parents when I was 9 years old. Naturally, even at 9 years old, I didn't understand why. And to this day, nobody's actually told me. I've tried to find out and decided that, is it really that important? Is it important to know why I was handed over? I think I know why. 1933 was the Depression. 1933, things were awfully tight. And I'm sure that my parents felt it like many other people. And I'm sure my grandparents had probably a little more than my parents had and were able to handle me financially, maybe not being such a young person. But at any rate, I did live with them for that period of time. And they were very sweet, typical grandparents. My grandmother was only 4'11", short and stocky, wore hair up in a bun, and was the kind that you'd expect a grandma to be. Cuddly, you know, caring and loving. And consequently, I found myself giving those grandparents the love that is rightfully a mother's and a father's. And I'm afraid it's still there today. But I think that's something that's rather difficult when you live with them. I threw many tantrums. I can remember a few of them. And those temper tantrums got me thrown in closets once in a while. In the time that my parents picked me up and took me to live with them, I had a brother. And a few years later, I had a second brother. Now, I hadn't been around brothers. I hadn't been around my parents. I didn't know what was happening to me. I not only got taken into their home and into their lives, but I got taken out of state, and we moved to New York, to Mount Kisco, New York. And I didn't know what was going on there either. And I continued to throw these temper tantrums. And I continue to get thrown in closets. I today can look back and say, all right, I was thrown in closets. I was throwing temper tantrums. I didn't understand a lot. I still don't today. But I was a kid then. I'm an adult today. I can accept it. I can accept the fact that I don't understand. But that's all right. We stayed in New York about 2 years, and then we came back to Illinois, at which time we lived in a home in Hillside, Illinois. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Illinois at all. But that was in the sticks. And at that point in my life, my father, who was a very domineering, patriarch-type person, put into my hands the care of my two brothers. My mother worked, my father worked. My high school was, maybe, I'm just guessing, 15 miles from where I lived. There was a train they called the Auroran Elgin. I took that train to Maywood, Illinois, and walked from the train to the high school, which was, I'd say, roughly a mile, perhaps. And I repeated that on the way home. I couldn't stay after school for school activities. Once in a while, I managed to sneak in a football game, but that was it, home right afterwards. There was a lot of things going on. In fact, there was somewhere between 700 and 800 in my graduating class. So I feel like I probably missed out on a good deal. I think I missed out on youth. But I didn't understand, and I know I didn't. I was resentful. It carried well into my adulthood. My resentments over my father, I think I've forgiven him today, and hopefully he forgave me. I wasn't the easiest person to be around. And although I did respect responsibility, I did make sure that I did these things, and I was thinking about that not too long ago and thought I was probably frightened to death of my father. At 18 years old, when I graduated high school, I figured enough of this garbage. I'm 18 years old. I couldn't drive. My father didn't believe that a woman was smart, didn't feel that she should drive, things like that. And so therefore, he had taught my brother how to drive, had bought him a small car, but he would not teach me. So I commuted to work. I started working for Illinois Bell Telephone. And worked there about 3 years and then started down in the Chicago Loop. I worked for an insurance company. And in that time, I also decided that I wanted to better myself. I had always had hand-me-down clothes from an aunt who was probably 15 years my senior. And I knew there were better things out there. So I started working, went to modeling school, purchased clothing, started a bank account. I was pretty proud of myself, and my father didn't know anything about this. I lived at home because at that time, I don't recall too many people not living away from home unless they were married. But I managed to stay clear of the house, believe me. Sometimes, till rather late. Of course, after I worked, I'd go to this modeling school that I was going to. And, I met people there, so, you know. Or after work, I might stop in a local bar and have a drink with some of my fellow workmates. But whatever the case was, I made sure I stayed away from that home. Well, lo and behold, I did go out and have fun. And one of the things I enjoyed was roller skating, and he touched on that we met at a roller skating rink, that he was there with the horses at Maywood Park, and he went across the street to get warm, and I was over there skating, and I liked what I saw. I was very disappointed when he sent his friend out to get me. He was a skinny, short runt. But at any rate, I did get to meet him after all. And like he also mentioned earlier, he proposed actually three times. It wasn't until the third time that I accepted. I don't know why. I think it was partially because I was so frightened to death of my father. There was never anything, it seemed like, that I did that was right. Like I said, he didn't think women were smart and so forth. So I think I, you know, in the back of my mind, this was really plaguing me, and I had to be sure. I knew if I left that house that I wouldn't be welcome back if things went the wrong way. Well, when I finally accepted Hank and I told my father, I was right. He kicked me out, not only out of the house, but out of his life for a few years. And it had its effects on me. I saw my mother when we came to town. We'd go to where she worked in the Chicago Loop. And that was the extent of seeing my mother for that period of time. And at Christmas, if I wanted to send him a card, send them a card or a gift, my mother said, "Don't bother. Your father won't accept it." Hank and I got married when he was in the military, and like he said earlier, he proposed to me, and that was two weeks before he left for Japan. And when he left for Japan, I went back home, continued working, living with my grandmother again. And that was a good experience to be with her one more time. And keeping my nose clean, just working, and then I got a second job and saved money, figuring that someday, because we thought Hank was going to be in Japan for 2 years, he ended up there, it was 13 months when he got back home. And it was just a lonely time, but I kept myself busy. And when it came time for him to come home, instead of paying for a ticket to join him in Japan, I bought our first car, put the down payment on it, which was good. But I also had to learn how to drive, which was something else. Because I drove that car I had finished my testing and everything, but I probably had it sitting in front of my grandmother's house for 2 months, afraid to get behind the wheel alone. So it just sat there. And when it came time to go down to Fort Campbell, Kentucky to join my husband, I asked a friend of mine to go with. She took another friend, and that was an experience in itself, because we got down there, and naturally they were single, so they wanted to go catting around. And this girl was married and waiting for her husband and wasn't about ready to do that, and naturally they wanted to use my car. It's interesting. Also, my apartment was across the street from from a cat house. Now, I have to say, I was very naive. I sat in my window for that period of time before Hank got there, because I set up the house, you know, the apartment and what have you, and watched the comings and goings of that house across the street, not knowing what it was. Thinking, man, those girls are popular. But anyway, when Hank finally did get back, the man that I had met and loved was different. And naturally, only being married 2 weeks, I expected that, hey, it'd be like on another honeymoon. We'd be taking up where we're right at that point where we just set our wedding vows. It wasn't quite that way. It seemed more important to go out and have beers with the boys. And that kind of hurt. And my way of retaliating, and don't ask me why, I slept on the couch and let him have the bed. I got screwed up early. But at any rate, in 1957, I think it was September of 57, Hank got out of the Army. And although I could see many good qualities in him as far as army was concerned, and thought he would be excellent officer material. I thought, good, he's getting out. And I'm sure in the back of my mind, I was thinking, get him away from these drinking buddies of his. Well, we got out, and it was no time at all, like he said. He was going out bowling and staying out after work, drinking, both. And once again, I could feel, as I look back, an uncomfortable feeling, even anger, entering into the picture. And I don't really recall what I did too much in those days. Probably just got moody, pouty. I may have said something occasionally, but I don't know. But anyway, at this time, we found our first home, and it was in Schaumburg, Illinois. So we moved there. And while I was living this, I didn't realize the progression, nor did I even know about progression of an illness. But today I can look back over these years and see how my illness, as well as my alcoholic's illness, progressed. And so we moved to Schaumburg, Illinois, this little five-room ranch. We had already had one child, Kimberly. And she was the light of our life. We had lost one prior to her. And moved to this little house, and we were fairly happy. I was pregnant, had our second daughter. And the drinking stepped up one more time. I can tell you that today. At the time, when you're living it, you don't realize these things. And there I did some things that I pretend I was going out. I snuck out of the house this one evening, went to some friend's home closer into Chicago, stayed out until it was well past the hour that I should have been out, came back sneaking in the house, slept on the couch, got up early, snuck back out, to make him think that I was out all night. Now, that's... yeah. There was also a point when he had brought home a cat, some friends of ours had given him. They had a daughter that played the accordion, and he was quite taken by this young girl's accordion playing. Said that he would like me to meet the family. Well, he invited them over. I'm sure in the back of my mind it was that they were more drinking people, because when they were in the house, I was in the bedroom, and when they were out of the house, I roamed the house. And never did get to meet this family to this day. There were quite a few car accidents over the years, as Hank made mention earlier. And at one point I can remember him, after several accidents, asking me how come I never ask how he is. Well, after you've been through a few car accidents, and the individual at the other end is your husband, and you know he's all right, he's speaking. Naturally I'd ask him, well, how's the car? I'll tell you, it was to a point where I dreaded to pick up the phone. It was interesting. Well, finally one day he came home and he said, how would you like to move to Princeton? Never been there, but he traveled the state and he knew where Princeton was. And he liked it. And I guess I believed, well, what the heck, because by then the town that we had moved to, Schaumburg, was a growing town. It was very small when we moved in, and it grew so fast that it outgrew its school system, and they were putting the children on a half a day. And that was unacceptable to this mother. So we decided to move to Princeton, and I'm not sorry today that we did. But one more time, I can see a progression of the illness on both of our parts. Because then I started pouring the booze and making the excuses on the phone to his employer. And I also left the phone book open to lawyers in the attorneys. Get the hint? I don't think he did. Did you? I kept the ledger. His comings, his goings, what he said, what he did, well, I thought he did. What I thought about him, what he said to me, you know, anything pertinent that might be good in the court. Sick. Like I said, he traveled the northern half, or he traveled, I'm saying northern half of Illinois, I'm thinking of his delicate job. He traveled the state of Illinois. And there was a point when I started calling the local bars, telling them not to serve him. Well, he drank all over the state! Brother! Sick! I've had many people ask me, you know, when we first got married, he was in the airborne. I had some people ask me then, why did you marry him? Why did you marry an airborne person? Why did I marry him? I loved him, I guess. You know, you don't think about the airborne being dangerous. Then they asked me, how come you stayed married? You know? Hell, all I can say is I guess I love the guy. I guess I went through hell for 18 years. Because our commitment to each other meant something to me. And I would say that I'm very fortunate in the fact that even though he may have drank when I first met him, he did not drink around me because he was too young in Illinois. But he was of age in New York. So I saw a person, a sober person, a person I liked, a person I respected, and a person I wanted to live my life with. And I think sincerely that over those 18 drinking years, that it was my hope, even though my life felt like it was a yo-yo, ups and downs, because he could stop. He could stop for a weekend. He could stop for a week. He could stop for a month and then go back, hell-bent for election. That dream, that hope, that he would someday find that he had a problem. And I couldn't put a finger on it. I knew I was uncomfortable in that situation. But you see, to me, AA was the Skid Row bum. I had no connection with it. I don't believe there's any drinking in my family. I've even questioned that lately. I lost my train of thought. At any rate, I hadn't heard of AA as such. I had never heard of Al-Anon. Did not know you existed. Didn't know what it was all about. When my husband found AA, he started going, and I have to say, I don't really remember, but I think he came home one day and said, there is a place you can go also. By this time, I had just had, and I missed one, my fourth child. I had a third one in Schaumburg. He was born in April of 1973, and I was a little upset. That was my 40th birthday. And after having had three through the alcoholic years, I sure as heck didn't want a fourth. But here I was. My husband says, if you want an abortion, he said, hey, you know. And I thought about it long and hard, but I also knew in my heart I wouldn't be able to live with this girl if I had. So then I had come to the point where I had to accept. I had to accept the fact that I am in fact pregnant. I am going to have this baby, or I have this baby. And I may as well get on with my life. And believe it or not, I'm still attempting. No, I love him dearly, but he's 15 today. He's 6'5", 240 pounds. And he has a definite attitude problem. And sometimes I have an attitude right with him. It's hard. It's not easy. But at any rate, once again, I had a baby under the alcoholic conditions. And lo and behold, the good Lord saw fit to direct my husband to AA 4 months after that. And what a blessing. Like I say, he came home and he told me there was a place for me. I don't remember exactly when that was, but it had to be within the early months of his sobriety. And so with a young baby at home, I attended rather sporadically, I would say, towards the end of that year, possibly into the first of the following year. But I knew when I went to that first meeting, which was in La Salle, Peru, that there was a warmth there. And my God, there were other people that were living this right along with me. I felt totally alone. I really did. I felt like there was no other living soul out there with this problem. I tried to shield it from my children. I tried to shield it from my friends, my relatives. Up until the latter part, I finally did try to reach out, and I got on the phone and called Hank's older sister because he's very close to her. And I thought maybe she could get through to him. And when I called her, she said, well, more or less, you made your bed, you know. Well, that didn't sit too well. And I don't remember whether it was a few days or a few weeks later, I decided, well, I'll call my brother. He's 3 years younger than me. I called my brother and he said, what did you do? Resentment? Ooh. The two times I tried to reach out, a good friend of mine in Princeton was the only person in Princeton that I shared with, and we're still friends today. And she's the one that gave me the telephone number that Hank was referring to. And I'm so grateful to her. Like I say, I knew nothing about the fellowship. And I have no idea why I held on to it and didn't run and give it to him as soon as I got it. But I held on to it for 2 years, and when he asked, I ran. The baby, and the baby wasn't quite as little and young as it was in the beginning. I found that I could get them to babysit, especially the second oldest, and make a little more meetings. And I got a little more attached to certain people. I finally got to the point where I found me a sponsor. And really grew very close to her. And then, lo and behold, the good Lord saw fit to take her from me. And it seems like I have difficulty with sponsors as the sponsorees have trouble with their sponsor, me. Because I tend to be out of town, it seems like, sometimes, and some of my sponsors, whom are sponsors of mine, and I'm sponsors with them, tend to work, you know, how that goes. So we sometimes have difficulty getting together. But I just recently got a sponsoree, and she's a delight. And I just worked with her on her fifth step this past Wednesday, and was surprised to see how much our lives kind of matched. A little different, and she's a lot younger than me, but it was great. And we became a lot closer. Suffice to say, Al-Anon, the people and what have you have just been great. We finally decided one year that we, another lady and myself, she lived in a town, I guess I'd say 5-7 miles from us, called Tiskwa, decided that we would start a meeting in Princeton because we were going over to LaSalle, and that's roughly 23 miles where we were going. So we started this meeting, and for a good many weeks we sat there and wondered if one or the other of us was going to be there, or if in fact somebody new would come in. And gradually it started growing, and there are times now when we have 25, and it can drop down to 7 at any given moment, you know how that goes. But it's great to see it growing, and my husband told me at that time, he says, Princeton, Illinois, it'll never fly. That was 13 years ago. And then he was chairing meetings over in LaSalle for the month of August, which happens to be his sobriety month. And I would have to stay home. That was usually on Sundays. And he said, why don't you think about starting a meeting over in the other room for the Al-Anons on Sunday morning? I thought, hey, that's not a bad idea. So started that, and I think that started off with like 7, and today it runs 7, 12, depends, like any other meeting. But it's a great little meeting. It gives people who have work either day or night or off on Sunday, gives them a chance. Some people treat it like church, and that's all right too. I'm happy to say it's still around and kicking, and I'm grateful because I go there when I can. When I came into this program, I had no trouble, believe me, after living with alcohol for 18 years, I had no trouble believing that I was powerless over that. No problem whatsoever. The power greater than myself, I always believed, yet I was not raised with a religion. I always believed that there was something out there, and I always called him God in the back of my mind. But like a good number of people, I didn't really know how to pray to God. I really didn't know what God was about. I was using him. I was directing him. I was telling him what to do for Hank and how to get Hank sober. I didn't ask for anything for myself, of course, in the long run. You know what I think that was. But since I've come in here, I've learned, like I say, I know very little about the Bible. Don't even try to learn it today for myself, because I find all my needs are met in my Al-Anon and AA associations. In meetings, but that's me, not you. And so anyway, I ask God that simple prayer to put his will in my life today, and that's about as simple as you can get when you're talking to God. And when I'm in a tight situation, and sometimes it can feel tight just when I'm invited to speak, like I say, I have gone blank when I stood up and talked to people, and I still remember that. But God has blessed me in the fact that he, as nervous as I was prior to coming up here today, I'm not as bad as I used to be, and he calmed me down pretty quick. I asked him to put the words in my mouth, because I never know what I'm going to say. I did write down notes. I've had these notes written since probably 3 years ago. Because it's kind of like a security blanket, in case I forget. I have no problem today. I find that through my life, I am learning that I have to work these steps even if I don't want to. Like I say, I have 4 children. Kim is 28. Just recently we got a phone call from her. She wanted her father and I to come to Kansas. She's attending Kansas State. She's married. We have a granddaughter. Her husband's a military person. They are separated, thinking about or getting a divorce. Kim called, found out that she was thinking about taking her life. Thank God. This is a girl that I tried to get interested in Al-Anon. And I don't remember if it was Alateen. I'm sure Alateen wasn't started in Princeton at her time. But never showed any interest in the fellowship. So anyway, she was thinking of taking her life. And I had been after her when this whole thing started, telling her that she should try Al-Anon, ACOA, I don't care what it is. Counseling, get help. And of course, being here and her there, I didn't know what she was doing, but at one point she said she tried to get in ACOA, and they told her they were full. Now all I can think of is it was not Al-Anon ACOA, but Claudia Black ACOA. Now, this is my opinion. But whatever. She was trying. But when she decided to take her life, she found a new life recovery, something or other group. A kind of a counseling thing. Hank went to it. I was unable to. And thank God for that. I really do. He went there. They had orientation the first day. The second day, he was reading four sheets of paper they sent with him and had to go back in his life with her, and he can explain it more, but I, from my understanding, look at things that happened over the years and his feelings on those times. And she had to do the same with him, and then the following day it was her and her husband. And if my husband had stayed, he would have been sitting in on that. But anyway, it came out in that she has some resentments towards me. And I think anybody who's been in Al-Anon any length of time knows that sometimes the children turn more resentments towards the non-drinking parents than the drinking. And that's all right, too. I'm just hoping that in the not-too-distant future, we can get together, hopefully over the holidays, and maybe go over some of these resentments that she may have. But in the meantime, I wrote her a note and just kind of apologized a little for whatever I don't know. And just a thumbnail sketch that I'm sorry, but I am a mother who is living through something, didn't have Al-Anon, you know. Nobody gives you a book that gives you a good rundown on how to raise children. But at any rate, that's Kim, and it looks like the divorce will go through, and it's their life. And I have learned through that experience and a few others along the way, turn it over to God. It isn't my problem. I have to fight it sometimes, you know, sometimes it gets the better of you right down in here. Almost makes you nauseous. But I cannot do anything about it. And believe me, prior to Al-Anon, I'd been in there trying to fix it. My second daughter, God love her, just left our home not too long ago in July. She was married last December to an Army person. And she is in Germany right now with him. Thank God. I enjoyed every minute having her with me, with us. But I think any parent knows that when your married children come back home, it's kind of nice to see them go. And it wasn't meant to be. They live with you. And get on with their life. Get on with ours. You know, there's a certain freedom that you miss when you have other people under your roof. And she's over there, I have to say, because she has given us some fun times and some wild times in our life. All of our kids have. But Karen was Miss Illinois of 1980. And that was an experience, I'll tell you. That was also the year our oldest daughter got married. Karen, right after she, I don't know, several months after she became Miss Illinois, some problems arose in that thing. And although she maintained the title, per se, she lost as far as traveling around and things like that. And she started working around the Princeton area. And she started drinking a little more than she should have. And this one day, not too far from home, she flipped her car three times. The third time she flew out of it. She walked away. She was in the hospital with a rather deep, large cut on the calf of her leg, but that's about it. I'm so grateful for that. But in the meantime, I don't know if it was the accident or what, but she kind of looked at her life. She remembered walking into our home and up into her room and looking like a sham and saying some things to her father, I think to me. At any rate, at that point in her life took a turn. She got involved in church. She became a member of the Assembly of God, which is fine, except she was trying to change everyone. We all, me too. My son-in-law was with us and daughter, and he was Catholic. You can imagine how well that went over. And there was one point, Hank was out of town, and I was sitting there, she's trying to convince him that he's wrong, and he's trying to tell her to back off, and I'm thinking I'm going to have to play referee. At any rate, it did get better. And she, I can't remember the year, the time necessarily, but 1954. Unfortunately, she's always been a loving, caring, precious girl. You'd have to know her. She's 6 foot. But she kind of want to cuddle. She was very sick when she was small. Maybe that, you know, brings you a little closer too. But anyway, she unfortunately gave herself to a young man of whom neither Hank or I know today, and became pregnant. Having been Miss Illinois, you don't stay in a small town of our size without a lot of repercussions. And I had heard there was a lot of gossip going around, and I said, God help anyone approaches me. They didn't. I still say, God help them. But at any rate, she left home, left the state, came out east, had the baby in Myrtle Beach. We drove there, I was there, but I did not see the baby. She gave it up to a Christian family for adoption, which was probably the best thing for her at that point in her life. I know she couldn't have handled it mentally, physically, spiritually, or financially. But we decided, seeing as my oldest girl and her husband were stationed over in Germany, that we would, in fact, go over there for a visit. And she stayed. She stayed for a year, which was great for her. And then she moved to California. And like I said, she's married now. Our son, Hank, is 24. And he's something else. Each one of them is precious in their own way. He's 6'5", and I think good looking. He's married and keeps all of his business to himself. Doesn't ask anything, doesn't complain. Just got back to the States out of the Army. And what can I say? Hey, that's an ideal situation. God bless him. You know? we've got enough things going on in our life, we don't need an extra. And of course then there's a 15-year-old who is a barrel of fun. He's involved in everything. He loves basketball, he loves football, he's in chorus and band, and he's also going to be in the madrigal. And he puts me through my ropes. I mean, these different situations, any mothers out here I'm sure can understand. You know, you think you've got a good program, by golly, you better work on it when you got these kids. And especially a 15-year-old. And I'm not always sure I'm doing it right. One thing I'm blessed with is the fact that I am in Al-Anon and my husband is in AA. There have been so many times in our life when I feel like he's been good. You know, I'll say something and he'll question it maybe, or I'll say something and he'll build up my confidence, such as when we started our business. Because there were times when there wasn't enough money in to even pay one bill, say anything about all the bills. And I was running low on believing in my higher power. I thought he had forgotten. And my husband would kind of jack me up. And hopefully I'm able to do that from time to time for him. I can't say what I do for him, but I know he's been great for me. He's helped me in so many ways. And I cannot imagine a marriage between an Al-Anon and an AA, and one staying home and the other going. I can't imagine it working, and yet I'm sure there are some that do. 33 years, and I couldn't be happier, more relaxed, most of the time, today, than I was back in those first 18 years. Like the kids, the things you've been through, it's like the memories, the photograph albums. I can look back now over my life. That's past. I don't have to live it. I can tell you about it. I can even laugh about it. And I can see humor in it, whereas I sure as heck couldn't when I first came in. And the business, I'm grateful. Without this fellowship, I'm sure we would not be in business for ourselves, nor would we be doing as well as we're doing. I was blessed in the fact that him being delegate, I got to go to New York. And any of you who've been there, I know you can understand. Of course, maybe you don't like big cities. I enjoyed it. I knew I didn't have to live there. Crazy. But it's fun. We don't have stores like Macy's and Gimbel's and some of the excitement. You know. That trip also afforded me the honor and privilege of meeting Lois W., shaking her hand, talking with her. Being in her home, can you imagine what a thrill that was? And no sooner had I met Lois W. than we went to Dr. Bob's house. Didn't seem to be anyone around, but the garage door was open, so Hank yelled in. And this man came out, took us through the front door, gave us a tour of the house, took us to the basement where they were fixing up room down there for pamphlets and stuff like that. And lo and behold, we found out that he was Dr. Bob's son-in-law. And then in came this woman in shorts and a t-shirt, carrying a bucket of paint, bopping down the stairs, parked on the step, found out it was Sue Windows, his wife, Dr. Bob's daughter. Got to meet with her, got to talk with her. Fantastic people. These are real privileges. Then just recently, my husband is now an archivist. And he located a woman in southern Illinois. And get this, she was an Al-Anon. And for 20 years, did the secretarial work for the AAs. 20 years. He got a bunch of material for AA archives, and I got some for Al-Anon. And in there, I was just tickled pink, because I started going through it, and there was a forum from 1954. and another one from 1970. Now, I started, I'd say, in late 73, and I, at one point, had such a stack of them that I thought, I'll just let some people who don't have any or might like to look at back issues, so I put them on the rack. Dummy. You know, I could have shared them. I didn't have to throw or get free of them completely. But at any rate, we're very much trying to work this program, and the things that happen are happening in our life today, I feel like more and more we have to apply the program, the 12 steps, to our lives in dealing with our family and dealing with other members in the fellowship, in dealing with our own feelings within ourselves or the business, no matter what it is. There are times when something comes up unexpected that we darn well better be prepared. And through working these steps, you find that you realize as you approach a problem where the problem is might be within you. And like I said, is in regards to my kids, I would never be able to turn them over to the care of God. I would have been in there trying to control. The fact that I'm allowing my husband freedom, a lot more freedoms than I ever dreamt I would allow. Of course, I don't think I would have had much to do with this. I'm sure that he would have bought me every inch of the way. And consequently, our marriage would have been on the rocks, I'm sure, by now. This is a beautiful way of living, and you're a beautiful bunch of people. I thank you for asking me to share, and I hope you'll continue to come back as I do. And I hope, my biggest hope is for Al-Anons. Do something other than just go to meetings. Please. I have found that a lot of people have never heard an Al-Anon speaker, and I don't profess to be a great speaker, but I'll tell you, if somebody asks me, I do try to do the best I can. I don't want somebody out there hurting because they haven't heard about us, as I well may have missed. I was up in New York and was shocked to find out that they had never heard an Al-Anon in this one particular group in Buffalo, New York, that we were at. And they were grateful to hear me. It's my story. 12-step work is great, and you do grow from it. I'm the group rep. We don't have anything else in our group. I keep pushing and pushing and pushing when it bothers me. About getting a secretary, the woman that's doing it has done it for 13 years. The spirit of rotation, I don't think, is a familiar terminology. But at any rate, I was pushing that not too long, about a year ago, and said, we really need a group rep. And they let me know I'm it. So I'm it, but that's it. I can't seem to get through to them. I've even invited delegates to speak at our meetings, but someday. I'm not going to lose sleep about it or get hell-bent for election and try to get them to do these things, but when the Spirit moves me, then I have to move. So, keep coming back. Try and carry the message. And remember, I love you. God bless.
With the alcoholic. I certainly appreciate sharing all the sharing that you have done. I know that it's difficult to get up and just lay it all out and say what you feel. It's important to do that because that's part of our recovery. And I think we do a lot of that in the service end of it with the 12-step calls and the one-on-ones. that's certainly an important part of my program. And I can understand what you're talking about, the small groups. I think that's wonderful. That's how I stayed around. It was not in the big groups, but in the little groups and the one-on-ones that could take the time to share with me that I wasn't crazy. I also appreciate the opportunity when we have both the AA and the Al-Anon here, because then you get the full story. You did pretty good, Hank, all things considered. Keep coming back. We love you. I'd like to open the floor for comments.